The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Time once again to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope. Here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cottolo.
And now, this.
I'm Frank Cottolo for The Dummy's Guide to the U.S. Let's look at America, a country so rich in natural resources that American people throw out more good things each day than can be made in China in a dog's age. Speaking of dogs, as you travel this great country, you will see many different species of dogs, some owned by people, and others strays that wander the cities and countryside looking for food. Hungry, though, is something no American state lets you become if you visit. Unlike being one of the too many Americans who go hungry every day, visitors can eat until their hearts are content or thoroughly congested. Either way, every state from Oregon to Virginia and the others I have left out is stocked with all the food you want, even if it is Chinese and not American. Accommodations in America are everywhere, and just about all of them have beds. So, staying overnight between days is not only fun, it's costly. You can stay at hotels, which are large and usually have elevators, or you can stay at motels, which are small and usually have bed bugs. But whatever you stay, and wherever you stay, and whatever you do, you can be sure it will be one more night in this great land. If you like to swim, try staying somewhere that offers a pool. If you like to dance, try staying somewhere that offers alcohol. As for children, bring them along when you travel across America, because we have Mickey Mouse. That's right. At the original Disneyland in California and the subpar, highly overrated Disney World in Florida, you can spend almost every dollar you have doing great things with the kids while loving the frolicking little mouse created by Walt Disney himself. Kids also love America's wild, wild west, although it has been tamed since the days men went around shooting each other and leaving dead bodies to rot in the sun. There are remnants of the colorful days of cowboys. Learn about how these men paved the way for a justice system that even today has large holes in it. Visit great states like Oklahoma, Wyoming, and Texas. America is a great place to visit. And remember, you don't have to be smart to have a great time. I'm Frank Cottolo for The Dummy's Guide to the U.S.
Ha ha ha. Ha ha ha, pal.
All aboard! had firecrackers blow off in my ear on 4th of July a couple years ago. Pretty stupid. Not in my ear. Wasn't. Just realized what that sounded like. Okay. Hey, light it. See what happens. You never know till you try. Come on. Let's see what happens. It wasn't quite that stupid. It was pretty close to that stupid. I don't know why I'm defending. I'm not that dumb. It blew up here, not in there. You imagine firecracker blowing up in your ear? No, this is like an inch away from my ear. The hell. Anyway, I was going to throw a firecracker. True story. I looked at it, and I was like, well, that's silly to just throw one at a time. They bundle them all together, get the whole thing moving. Good lesson for the kids. Watch what daddy's attempting. I told my friend, I said, you light them, and when they're lit, yell, now, and I'll throw them. So I was like this, and I hear, okay. I didn't hear now, and I didn't hear anything for about 6 months. Except the phone ringing every now and then. Somebody gonna get that? Somebody gonna get that? Why does Daddy say that all the time now?
Listening to Frank Coppola.
That's his control over there. You know what I mean?
I never thought it would be like this at all. Oh, what happened? Welcome to the new underground. Notify the authorities. Spin the bottle. Take a pill. Hold that ghost. Keep the faith. Roll away the stone. Pass the ammunition. Follow the bouncing ball. Brace yourself for the shot. Keep your eyes covered. Talk to the hand. Do not bend, fold, or mutilate, because the Bard of Broadcasting is now in control. Wake up. It's night. And that means it's Thursday with me, Frank Coppola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. We're going to be talking Hollywood tonight, today, this afternoon, whenever it is you're listening. We're always there. That's the problem. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. It is once again time. This is more than once again time, you know, because it's amazing. There's a certain feeling, and I don't know if this is true, but it always seems like we're on a day. A Thursday is always on the precipice of summer. And we are on the precipice of summer as we do this live from the place where we do this live. You know, can't say that anymore from our studios. Can't say that because people can do this in their closet. They could do this in their kitchen. So he's like, it's from my kitchen. Here's my show. You know, you do a podcast from your garage. This is not a podcast. So I want to get that straight again, too, okay? Because a lot of stations starting to pick up this show. More stations starting to pick up the show here and there to repeat it. Repeat it, to play it, you know, after this is live. You can only hear it here on SRN MediaWorks Live. And then your mobile, if you got mobile, you can listen to it. But, I mean, it used to be different. But now it is live exclusively here. But then later on, it's on a lot of other stations, can play it again. But it's not a podcast. I don't, you know, this doesn't even make sense to me anymore. But I guess I can't fight the phraseology, if there is actually a word called phraseology. I can't fight that, but the station's calling, would you like us to play your podcast? And by the way, when I read their email, that's what their voice sounds like to me. If you'd like us to play your podcast. Every time I read something, I put a voice to it, and I don't know why this happens, but it does. Listen, so we're going to be on many, many other stations. I think we just started in Oklahoma on Sunday afternoon on a regular. This is like on a station you can get, like, you know, you don't have to put it, you know, you don't have to plug anything into your mobiles, or get apps, or daps, or zaps, or anything. You just, like, turn on the car radio on AM. Now, that's scary. That's scary. We were on one other station, and still are one station, in Georgia, that is a religious station. They're probably listening to me right now. I mean religious. They're called The Light or something. And I should know, because I should know our stations. And I don't know, I never could figure out for the life of me why they would want me on. Because I'm, it's not like I'm not positive or anything like that, but I'm certainly not anywhere near the kind of energy that makes you want to get up out of bed in the morning. You just pretty much want to stay in bed. And many people who listen to me just want to go to bed. And I don't mean that way, because there are people who do that. But what I mean is there are people who just want to go to bed. They're like listening to me and they're going, oh my, and then what, 2 hours of this? But we do have a guest. And he's going to, I'm going to have him on here at 9:30, which, because we do this live, so I'm going to do the real time. See, now that's going to screw up a lot of you other guys. All of you other stations, I don't care, but I do love you other stations. I especially love all my friends in Great Britain. They have been good to me from the very beginning. Spain and Great Britain have been, they started off being good to me. Or should it be good to me or be well to me? Be good, they've been well, how can we say well, being good to me since the beginning. And you don't even want to know the beginning, because that was a long, long time ago. But we're, and a lot of you people are going to say, were you really here that long? A lot of people would say that. And there are a lot of people who haven't heard this show. And there are a lot of people who will never hear this show, because I won't let them. I will just simply block them from my, anyone can listen to this show. Of course, my name is Frank Cotola, man's name with Dorn's the title of the show. Let me just tell you this before we start rolling here. And before my co-host, again tonight is Jeremy Long. I know you think that he changed his name. But that is his actual name. You know, usually you get a name like Jeremy Long, they say, that's not your name. That's, is it? Because, you know, because everybody had a weird name at one time. Schlock Binnen, Mistentower, you know, and they change, and you hear about stars. We're going to be hearing about a lot of stars, like Archibald Leach. He never would have used his name. They couldn't use his name. They changed it to Cary Grant. And like there's, William Henry Pratt. They said, you can't use that name. We'll change it to Boris Karloff. So these people changed their names in the old days. But there were people who had, like, regular names. Long, Carpenter, Woods, Beers. I hear there were people named Beers. There were people named Smith. There's lots of Smiths. We know that. We have a Smith on staff here, too. We get Jones, Smith, regular names. And then the people with the two names, Al, Alberts, people have first names or last names, Frank, okay? And these people, of course, in the old days were all just farmers and people out in the middle of nowhere, okay? And the people who went to the cities and did the great things, the creative things and the stuff that had to do with the media were all Lichtenhausers and Leichenstowers and Beinwitzes and Brian, even Mel Brooks changed his name. Do you know Mel Brooks' real name? You know, we remember his real name? Kaminsky. I think it was Kaminsky or Mel Kaminsky or Kalinsky. Kids got phones now. They just look up everything. See, yeah, at your fingertips, you have the world. But I want to mention this also because coming up, I want to just do this coming up stuff. We have a couple of great announcements going to be coming up real shortly. Some of them involving Velvet Steel, The Artist D, and me, which is a good name for a book. I think I may write that tomorrow, start writing that tomorrow. And then we have another great announcement that's coming up from the Final Frontier Network, of course, which is the late Rick Busby's station. And we're going to have some wonderful things going on internet radio and alternative broadcasting. This is more than I ever wanted to do in alternative broadcasting, ever, ever. In fact, I still don't want to do it. But I do it. I'm here because I know people follow me. They don't follow me in the street. They don't walk behind me and hide in the bushes. I'm not talking about that. Although if I had stalkers, I wouldn't know. Because if I had a stalker, they wouldn't dare show their face because they wouldn't want to embarrass themselves knowing they're stalking me. So they wouldn't do it. That would be the end of that. And you don't have to. Coming up, because July is coming up. Summer's here. July is coming up shortly, a couple of weeks. The next time that Tom Savino is on, and we do a Savino Cotolo Chronicles, we're going to be doing Tonto jokes. Now, you probably don't know about that. It's going to coincide with Walt Disney's release, the Walt Disney release of the Lone Ranger, that reboot of the old thing. Now, you might have heard a show we did a long time ago. Well, on the original Lone Ranger and stuff. But this is a brand new thing. It's a Walt Disney thing. And we're not getting paid by Disney, and they're not helping us. They're not telling us to do this. But we thought it would be a good time since people will actually be out there going to see the Lone Ranger movie and stuff, that they would want to know about Tonto jokes, which were old jokes and highly, highly sensitive. I guess socially sensitive. What do you call it? They're nondescript. They're politically incorrect. That's the only thing, because they're stereotypical. But you know what? It's all in fun, man. We've been doing these things for years. Tom Savino and me, Frank Cotolo, together once again here at Cotolo Chronicles in July. Watch for that. CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Follow me at Twitter. Follow me at Twitter. You can follow Jeremy Long at Twitter. It's Dr. Jeremy Buzz Smith. What is your name on again?
Jeremy Long, M.D.
Jeremy Long, M.D. Don't ask. It's good. It's a cute thing. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's a cute thing to put M.D. after your name. If you haven't worked the many years it takes to earn such a title, just shove the letters on. People do things like that.
I'm a pretty cute guy.
People do things like that. They're all, you're a large man. He's large. I don't mean, Jeremy's not fat. I don't mean that. When I say large, he's like, he's you loom boldly. You loom boldly. That's it. And now, Jeremy, I want to mention that if you're anywhere in town, at the end of June, Jeremy will be an MC at a wonderful, I don't know if it's wonderful, but it's going to be good. It's going to be good. What would it be, a summer festival? What would it be called? Why don't you talk about it?
It's called the Hubbub Festival. That'll be Saturday, June 29th in the Harrisburg area. The exact address is 67 Knight Street, Harrisburg, PA. That's Knight as in Knight in Shining Armor, not night time. It's apparently just a big field. They're going to set up a stage. There'll be several bands there. It's BYOB, lots of food, camping, fishing. Big festival. I'll be doing MC.
Second, you can't go fishing at this festival, can you?
Yeah, they have a little pond. It's catch and release fishing available.
Wow, that's weird. Wow. It's $12 a head and extra money if you want to bring the rest of your body. Is that the deal? I didn't know. I'm going to sneak in through the back. I'm not paying $12 to go to this joint. I don't have to pay. Okay. Because that's what I like, being a special person. I enjoy being a special. I always like that. And, you know, we're going to talk about special people. We're going to talk about Hollywood for it. It's a brand new book. Jeez, I hope my nose isn't bleeding. It's a brand new book. It happens. So what can I tell you? I get these radical changes in temperatures. And while I'm, you know, I did this show once literally from the floor. I was on the floor with my head down. I got that Legionnaire's disease. It was the disease that was going around from, what? Lou Gehrig. I'd be dead, you dope. Yeah, I got Lou Gehrig disease, and I did a show while I had Lou Gehrig disease. Holy shit. My name is Frank Cotolo, a man whose name is doing the title of the show. We're going to be talking to a man who has been a professional guide, tour guide in Hollywood. As many of you might know, and might not care. I lived in Hollywood many years and worked among the hoi polloi and among many, many celebrities. And this guy knows stories. He's written a book, and he knows it's all about its anecdotes. Don't expect beginnings, middle, and ends. Okay, this is just stories. They're anecdotes. I don't know where that phrase originated. Anecdote, and anecdote, if you want to say it incorrectly. You know, we have a lot of fun.
every day in life, as we have told other people to do, is you go and purposely mispronounce words. Now, I like to do this. Yeah, I do. I enjoy doing it. Have you found any recently that you like? I mean, you see a word, you know how to pronounce it, and then you say it incorrectly just for fun to someone else?
Two of my favorites are knife and recipt.
Okay. Okay, that's good. I go for a bigger ones, like I forgot the one I saw last night, yesterday, and it was I used ancillary. I said ancillary. I said something else. I said it differently. I forgot. I don't know, but I see something. I like to do that, and then so it's something you might do, especially in the summertime. Now it's not as good as playing volleyball or badminton or something, but it's fun because we like to work the brain. But speaking of brains, which one kind?
Remember tetherball? Where you hit the ball around the pole.
Okay, I grew up, as you might know, in the city, in Brooklyn, New York, where things were we don't play little baby fairy games like tetherball. That's your generation. This is the millennium. Are you you're a millennium kid, aren't you? No, you're not a millennium.
I was born in
1992. 92 is a, maybe you are a millennium. 92 is a millennium? I don't know. Or is it a double XGY? I'm from the double X generation. There's no doubt about that. No,
I wear
a double X. I drink double X. Right? Stay toasty, my friend. I drink Dos Equis. I used to drink Dos Equis actually a long time ago. We used to, because in Hollywood especially, we had a lot of Dos Equis because we lived close to Mexico, where they make Dos Equis. In fact, Dos Equis is Spanish for two X's. Did you know that? Okay. Dos Equis. Or you could say Dos Equis, or you could say it differently, or you could say Mexico. You could say Mexico. I'm from Mexico, not Mexico.
I'm from California.
California. You know, it's funny that in California there are many many streets and places that people always mispronounce when they get there.
I'm from Debt Riot.
Debt Riot?
Detroit.
Debt Riot. I like that. Yeah. Detroit. Debt Riot. That, now you know it. Now you do. You make a different word out of the word that is pronounced one way. Fun games that you can learn more about. Fun games, if you just call this number, 555-6262, and we'll tell you more about fun games and how you can get a list of fun games for only three payments of $13.33. We're going to have a lot of fun. So we're going to get on to Skype, and we're going to talk to Stephen. Stephen, I don't know whether he calls himself Stephen or Stephen. And I'm hoping. It doesn't even look like he's online. I don't know why he hasn't shared details with me yet, but I asked him the other day. And he's right here. You want to see if he's here now and talk to him?
Yeah,
first we're going to do this. We're going to sell some books. Then we'll come back. Here's our good friend, the late Rick Busby, selling my book right here.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
You know, Kindle's one of those, Kindle sounds like a hip-hop word, doesn't it? Like bizzle, shizzle, kizzle, Kindle. On your Kindle, get your shizzle on your Kindle, hang a bindle.
Yellow.
Get a bindle on your Kindle and a yellow on your fellow. Yellow, they call me mellow, yellow. Wrong one altogether. Go get that. You know, it's still very tummy here. There's going to be a Rick Busby Memorial Edge show, the final show of the Edge. It was his show on Tuesday nights. And we'll tell you more about that as time goes on. Stephen, when people use P-H-E-N, and I know this too because in my Molotov memoirs, Stefan, his name is Stefan. He spells it S-T-E-F-A-N, Stefan, Stefan Gesick, who did the illustrations of my book. And I think that's cool because you know to say Stefan, but when you see S-T-E-P-H-N, talk about mispronouncing, someone say like, you'd say, hi, you think you know, right? So you go, hi, Stephen. He goes, that's Stefan. And then you meet another guy, say, hi, Stefan. He goes, that's Stephen.
Kind of like Caroline and Carolyn, same thing.
Do you mean if they don't spell it, they actually say Caroline if your name is Caroline?
Yeah, sometimes. I had a friend, Carol. I said, hi, Caroline. It's Caroline, Jeremy. It's Caroline.
You know what I like to do? When people ask my name, have you write your name down somewhere? And my name, even though it's a pretty simple name to pronounce, people don't know. So they go, can you spell your last name? So I don't say it. I just go, C-O-T-O-L-O. They go, how do you pronounce that? And I go, Schwartz. You see? And they go, huh? Huh? It's amazing how many people just do not have a sense of humor.
Yeah, I agree.
You see, you know why? They're always afraid. They're afraid it's true. They don't think, you're not expecting the humor. They're not expecting the joke. So in the back of their head, they go, don't laugh. What if it's really Schwartz? They're saying, you know, then you're going to look like an idiot because people are so self-conscious, you know. Speaking of self-conscious, what else do we have to show you or tell you about? A lot of other things we'll tell you about later. There's a bunch of things going on. And by the way, this show is, of course, all over the world. And whenever you're listening and you go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, find the stations that are running the show now on the bottom there, and there's even more. And I got to update that thing. And what was I going to say about that? I was going to say do that for a reason, but I forgot the particular. I know, isn't it boring to be here? I got a co-host who just yawns right in my face. Isn't that boring to be here, isn't it? You know what he's sitting here? He's going like, well, I guess I got to wait till the next time I talk. I'm just kind of bored here. Can I talk more? Were you going to...
It was a very enthusiastic yawn.
An enthusiastic yawn. Let's call Stefan or Steven. Find out once and for all what's going on. This is a... Because you know what? What happens if he's not there? I mean, where he's on to us? I don't know. I just got a bad feel. Look. This person, no, I don't want to call this person on their mobile. Look at this. Call this person on their mobile line. I don't want to.
He's not even on.
Why not? Well, we got 2 minutes till 9:30, so that's 6:30. I hope he knows it's a 3-hour difference. I don't know why he didn't share his details with me. I don't know why. Here, send what? Send stuff. Where's Stefan? No, see, calling Scott. Oh, here we go. Thank you. You got it. Let's see if he answers, Stefan. Well, it should.
I don't know if he's online.
Well, why isn't he online? He's supposed to be a guest on my show.
Is he aware?
It's ringing now, so we'll see. Yeah, he's aware. Who would not be aware they're a guest on my show if they're a guest on my show?
I wasn't aware.
Stephen? This is why I haven't said it. You just blew the whole thing, you know. You could like let people. Don't let people on. Don't let on to people that you're stupid. But you did. How do you say his name? Probably Schwartz. Okay. It's
right.
Hey,
oh.
There. Hey, you're okay.
Oh. Hello.
Stefan?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Steven.
It's Steven, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Why do some Stevens use PH and some... How do we know the difference when we see the name?
Wasn't my choice.
Oh, we don't know then.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we're here. I have a co-host here who comes on every now and then, Mr. Jeremy Long. He's a stand-up comedian and a stand-up guy, I may add. And he's also been around, has some Hollywood stories too. So we figured all three of us would get together, try and sell your book. And we don't want to tell all your stories because then nobody's going to want to buy your book.
Well, you know, there's over 1,000, and I love to share them, so...
Well, we'll tell stories. We'll
yeah.
Let me ask you something. Okay, tell us exactly what you do. You're in Hollywood. You're in L.A. right now. Okay, where are you exactly? I don't mean exactly. We're not going to tell people your address, but I mean, give us an idea, because I lived out there any number of years.
Palms, right across the street from Culver City, right down the street from Sony Studio, which used to be the MGM studio where The Wizard of Oz was made.
Okay, near MGM, that's right. I was down there. I did a film down there. We didn't go to MGM much, but okay. So now we know. And how have you lived there? Did you grow up?
Grew up in Huntington Beach, California. Moved to LA about, I don't know, about 25 years ago. Went to college. Really didn't know what I wanted to do. Decided to be a writer. And then I got a job as a limousine driver because I figured I could write while I was in the limo. And I was asked to give tours. And I found it really interesting. I had a little bit of knowledge, about movie history. And it got a good response. So I said, well, you know what? I think I'd like to be a full-time tour guide because I really enjoy telling stories. And so I got, I got to the point where I – The thing was, you have to see the same thing all the time, but you can, the material, it was unscripted. So I just got this huge catalog of stories and it got a great reaction. I was changing them, adding to them all the time. And that's what eventually, I did some other projects, but that's what eventually led to the idea of the book, that the stories could be told anywhere. And so they were quick, small, over 1,000 anecdotes. So that's what led to Hollywood Stories.
Tell people who don't know and have never been to Hollywood and that whole area in Los Angeles, why would someone take a tour? What do they see? Tell them, what do they do?
Oh, well, I do private tours, and I do the tour with the company that I work for. So a private tour, we can go wherever people want to go. I love to take people up into the mountains, up to the Griffith Park Observatory, Lake Hollywood, get a great view. Don't have time to do that on the city tour with the company that I work for because we have to get people back to the airport area. So that's pretty standard. Go to that one goes to Hollywood, the Farmers Market, Venice Beach, Rodeo Drive, because we have the time constraints. So, but I love, I have the website HollywoodStories.com. And people come out for private tours, like they have their own vehicle, and it's always different. I really enjoy doing those, actually, because they have different routes depending on where they're staying and where they'd like to go. And if I do it, I try and tell a lot of stories about people like Walt Disney and John Wayne and Marilyn Monroe, yeah, and keep it fresh.
I'm still trying to figure out how it is that you decided to be a writer, and you said, well, I know what I'll do. I'll be a limo driver because I could write while I'm a limo driver. I didn't figure that one out. What do you mean? How could you write while you're a limo driver? That's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
What would happen is, that most of the gigs, like the time I drove Sammy Davis Jr., for example, I just opened to the Beverly Hilton, and there's like 5 hours of waiting.
Hey, there's the first. Do you remember? You had 25 years ago. Geez, I'd already left L.A. But when you say Sammy Davis Jr., because I remember meeting Sammy back there at some dumb TV show or something. But do you remember what people? Maybe you don't know this. You know what people used to say about Sammy? Is it, you having Sammy Davis Jr. stories in there?
I have some. The one where I met him, where I was talking to his security guard and outside his house, and I was saying, is Sammy a nice guy? And he told me a story that he had 6 celebrity clients, the security guard did, and then he had broken his leg, and he was out of commission, and he got out of the hospital. He went to the mailbox, was scared of all the bills, and Sammy had never stopped paying him. He kept sending checks the whole time. And he was the only one of the clients who did that, and he never said a word about it. So he said, well, now I work exclusively for him. And there was a plaque by the front door of Sammy's house, and it said, this house welcomes anyone with peace and love and brotherhood in their hearts. And I said, oh, that's so nice. And the security guard said to me, yeah, well, if anybody climbs over that fence with peace, love, and brotherhood in their hearts, I'm going to shoot them dead.
Yeah. They used to say, and I don't know if anybody would even understand this these days, because Sammy's the kind of person, kind of celebrity, is kind of fading, to new generations. A lot of people don't know, younger people don't know him. But they used to say, hey, Sammy, I'll see Sammy. Have you seen Sammy? No, but I'll keep an eye out for him.
Yeah.
Remember that? See, now beat on him when you left, because people don't even, do you know what I'm talking about there, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had one eye, yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of younger people don't know that.
He was known to be virile, so there were a lot of statements about that as well.
Which, he was going to be what?
Virile.
Oh, okay.
He was known for
being virile.
Yeah, for being active, shall we say?
Yes, active. I know
statements about that as well.
Yeah, but I used to like some of those. Some of those things. So let me ask you, how did this? How did it start that you would get to people to know, get to people? And where would you hear these stories? In other words, you started out, and now you're going to tour, and they tell you, your company says, no, don't forget to tell them there's Grauman's Chinese, and there's that, and there's the La Cienega and whatever. And where did you get these stories?
Well, different ones. Actually, the book opens up with a story a gentleman told me on the tour. The day before he went on my tour, he'd taken his family up to Universal Studios. And so he went on that tour, and they were going by where Alfred Hitchcock made Psycho, and the tour guide was talking about it. And all of a sudden, a man came out from behind the Bates Motel with a wig and a dress and a knife. And you know, everybody's laughing, Norman Bates in drag. And the tour guide says, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who this is, and he's not part of the tour. So the man is running toward the tram, yelling and screaming, and people are getting nervous, gets to the tram, raises the knife, people start screaming, and he took off the wig, and it was Jim Carrey. And he was making the movie up there, The Man on the Moon. He had a little downtime, and he decided to scare people half to death. And then he took pictures and signed autographs. So
funny,
you know,
funny thing is, in the Hollywood I lived, it would not be odd to see somebody running, a man running down the street, running down Hollywood Boulevard with a wig.
absolutely not. No, John Carradine, before he became a big star back in the 30s, he used to do what some of the people do now. You know, there's all sorts of people running around in costumes. John Carradine used to run around Hollywood Boulevard and yell out Shakespeare. In fact, he would camp out at the Hollywood Bowl and yell out Shakespeare at the top of his lungs. And years later, he met John Ford. John Ford hired him to be in a couple movies, and John Ford confessed to him. He said, you know, one reason I hired you is because I recognized you at the bottom of the Hollywood Bowl. You were keeping me awake all the time, so I figured if you were a working actor and professional, you'd stop annoying people.
That's a good story, John. Yeah, I was fascinated. The only time I ever met him once, and I was fascinated because he's like the old Hollywood that just doesn't exist. You know, he had some great stories about his best friend was Barrymore.
Oh, yeah, Barrymore is a real character.
And Barrymore, he had some good stories about Barrymore because he told me a couple. And he was a wonderful guy. There aren't a lot of people left. This is why I think it's important what you do, because there must be stories that will die awful deaths now because there aren't people telling stories the way they used to in Hollywood, are there?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I didn't care if it was a person from the past or a present person. I just cared if it was a good story. And it does seem, I mean, you know, I got Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears. They're all in the book, but sort of incidentally, they're part of other stories. But it does seem like it's easier to get stories about people like W.C. Fields or Walt Disney or DeMille, you know, maybe because time has passed and things get a little bit more exaggerated. Maybe people were drinking more back then and have, you know, faultier memories or whatever, but there is sort of that vintage classic anecdote thing. Like you mentioned Sid Grauman, for example. One of the things he did, he was very good friends with Ernst Lubitsch, the director, and he tried to play a practical joke on him. That Ernst Lubitsch had to fly on an airplane from LA to Santa Barbara for a premiere. And he was terrified of airplane flying back in 1933. So he told Sid Grauman about it. And he said, will you go with me? I'm so scared. And Grauman said, sure. And Grauman arranged for two stuntmen to dress up like airplane pilots and ride in the cockpit with the real pilots, unbeknownst to Lubitsch. So during the flight, Grauman is trying to make him nervous. Oh, Ernst, why don't you look out the window? Look at those beautiful jagged rocks. And Ernst, you know, said, no, thanks. He lit up a big cigar. The two phonies came out of the cockpit into the cabin. Mr. Grauman, Mr. Lubitsch, terrible news. The plane is running out of gas. We have to abandon ship. And they jumped out with parachutes. And Lubitsch swallowed his cigar, fainted, and luckily recovered from a mild heart attack.
Really? Now that's what caps the story right there. Wow, that's and you know, that's what I mean, though. There's one of those great stories. I think it's great that you have newer people too. That's well and fine. But there's something about those classic stories because that whole era is completely gone. I remember when I used to live on an apartment on Franklin
and La Brea. Right. Okay? You know Franklin and La Brea, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, the old Huntington Hartford estate was in the back, and it was still it was a mess. I mean, I don't know who owned it or what have you, but they hadn't and it was decrepit and probably all fixed up or changed now. But in those days, it was just a real ghostly, horrible place. We used to go back there just to walk, and they had the big pool area, and it was amazing to think that all these great stars were. You know, it's a real ghostly, spooky place. And I don't think there's anything. Is there anything left like that anymore? That remnants of like ruins of the old classic Hollywood?
Yeah, there are like steps over at Houdini's house and things like that. I don't know if it's worth it to go up and see stuff like that. Honestly, I never have. There are old buildings like say the Chateau Marmont Hotel.
I worked in the yeah.
Or the Sunset Tower Hotel. The Roosevelt Hotel supposedly has the ghost of Marilyn Monroe on the 12th floor.
I never saw
her. And the ghost of Montgomery Clift on the 9th floor. And supposedly he's keeping people awake, playing his bugle all the time, still rehearsing for From Here to Eternity. So there are some old buildings. But a lot of the great old homes, unfortunately, like James Stewart's home, Lucille Ball's home, Walt Disney's home, now torn down with new property there. In fact, a little quick one. Barbara Streisand, about 15 years ago, was trying to sell her Holmby Hills home, which was right down the street from where Michael Jackson died and where Walt Disney lived. And she was trying to sell it for $10 million, couldn't get it, ended up selling it for $4 million, was really upset. The new owner came in, demolished her house, and immediately turned around and sold the empty lot for $7
million. Wow. There's some... That's... Was that when you said that wasn't where Bel? That's not Bel Air. Where was
Holmby
that?
Hills. Holmby Hills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a street there called Carrollwood Drive. It's where Michael Jackson died, renting out the house from the Ed Hardy, the wife of the Ed Hardy company, the head of the Ed Hardy company, supposedly for $100,000 a month. It's where Burt Reynolds used to live, where George Harrison used to live, where most of them are used to live, unfortunately, when you're doing a tour.
Exactly. And they used to live, and they used to actually live on Earth, too, but they don't live anymore.
Frank Sinatra over here, you know. Actually, I was right around the corner. Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston, they used to live on a street called Ridgedale, and it was actually a cul-de-sac. And what it would happen is three or four tour buses would go down there, and they'd literally get stuck. And then the people living there, like Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman, they'd be stuck in their driveways. They lived next door when they were married. And that's one reason why buses are really no longer allowed in residential areas. The residents just got furious and kept calling and calling. So now virtually every tour company who goes into that area is risking a ticket. And you know, they have to decide whether the amount of profits they can make is worth the tickets that they get. But a lot of the drivers don't want to deal with it because they have to go to court and things like that. So the only really way... the only way you can do it legally, really, is to have a private thing in an SUV.
Stephen, pronounce your last name for us.
Shohet.
Shohet. I told you. Shohet, not...
That's what I said.
Shohet. Oh, that's what we said. So we had to correct Steve Shohet. Stephen Shohet is with us here on Cotolo Chronicles, and we're talking about his book, which is called Hollywood... I don't have it in front of me.
Hollywood Stories, short, entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies.
Let me ask you a question, because I had heard this when I was out there, and I moved out there in 78, so, you know, I got this. It was still part of the old school out there back in before the 80s, but I was told that there were people who gave tours, you know, they sold these little, and they had little maps and stuff, and they brought you around. They brought people around on these little buses or whatever they had, and they just pointed out to houses at random and said, "Hey, there's where Milton Berle lives." And there's were there a lot of frauds in those at one time?
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't know always you know, maybe they thought it was, because there's almost like a tour guide lore that goes out there. Like, there was this one house above Mulholland Drive that everybody says that Will Chamberlain used to own, that Ron Howard now owns. And, you know, from what I've seen, it isn't true, but a lot of the tour guides are saying it because they heard it from another tour guide. And, you know, what I tried to do was ask, you know, take a map, and then I would drive by these homes, and I'd say, hey, you know, does such and such really live here? And usually they'd say, yeah, he does, you know, whatever. And so that was the best way I could confirm it. And, you know, I don't think most of them are trying to lie, but at the same time, they are trying to entertain. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe some things come out. And of course, you know, if you have some homes like Alfred Hitchcock, you know, he actually had this home where he rented for 6 months from Carol Lombard when he first came to America. So you say it was Alfred Hitchcock's home. It, you know, it's true. It was his rented home for 6 months. You know, the maps seem to be pretty accurate from everything I can see.
My next door neighbor was Elsa Lanchester once. I lived in a place, and Elsa Lanchester in the Charles Lawton estate was right next door. When I say next door, I don't mean, you know, these houses and these places, these territories are a little different. But we lived in it was kind of a penthouse. And then looking over was Charles, and Charles was already dead, but we would see Elsa out there once in a while. She was still alive back then. Obviously, that's why we'd see her. She was still alive. And we saw Elsa, and we would know. But I would talk to people, and and nobody knew.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like when you have friends inside the industry, they would know certain places, and right. They would say, you see, that's his house, and that's him, and that's him. And then if you were in that level of work or whatever, and you worked with celebrities, they would know things. And yet, I don't know if those are the places, they were the same places that P tour guides were taking them. So how are these things verified? I mean, how do you find out?
One of my favorite anecdotes is about Lee Marvin. He once got so drunk he couldn't find his house, so he had to buy a movie star map to locate it.
That's a good one, yeah. How many of these are 100% true, or how many of them are a legend, or just have they gone, they've been watered down since the first time they've been told? What do you think? What are your sources?
You know, I couldn't give you a percentage. The bibliography is huge, over 200 books, and one of the things, like if you find George Burns, for example, he would tell these stories, and then the writer would contact him right before the, you know, their book. He told, like, Max Wilk, who wrote the book The Wit and Wisdom of Hollywood, this story about a man named Otterman, who was a executive who had to put up with all this nonsense about, you know, the star wanted their dressing room painted purple, and he finally got frustrated and said, Mr. Burns, have you ever run a studio? And George Burns said no, and he says, well, you're running one now. And Otterman left L.A. and went back to New York, never to work in the movies again. So Max, George Burns told that story to Max Wilk. So Max Wilk wanted to publish the story, and right before publication, he said, you know, George, I can't find any record of a man named Otterman working at Paramount Studios ever. And George Burns said, well, that's because that story I told you is complete fabrication.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a big, big, big element of that. And that's why, you know, with the book, I said, this is a matter of history, a combination of history, biography, and lore.
You know, the truth is, Stephen, that actual history that is taught in American history, European history, you know, in world history, whatever, it's probably strewn with such elements. Right, we don't know where does legend end, where does fact begin, and where are the details actually, you know, describing what happened. So history itself is on the line when it comes to talking about this stuff.
And there's absolutely things you can verify. You know, absolutely, Greer Garson didn't want to be in Mrs. Miniver when it came out because she felt that it was neutral toward a Nazi character, because that was the edict of MGM Studios, because we weren't at war yet. It was being made in 1941, And as soon as the attack on Pearl Harbor came and Germany declared war in America, then she was told, and the filmmakers were told, William Wyler, that you could now make the Nazi as bad as you want him to be. So things like that, you know, when you talk about history, about certain things that are out there, when the movie was made, and Natalie Wood having problems with the character of Maria in West Side Story, and Tony Mordonti, who played Action, you know, one of the Jets, had to go over and coach her and changed his opinion of Natalie Wood, who he thought she was a stuck-up prima donna, and it turned out that, you know, she was scared and shy, and that came out, you know, as sort of arrogant and indifferent when people in the cast met her. Things like that are definitely verifiable. And then there are other stories that have multiple versions, stories that were told, you know, a story about David O. Selznick not being satisfied with Vivian Leigh's endowments in Gone with the Wind and making her put on falsies and her going into the dressing room and refusing to do it and coming out exactly how she came in, and David O. Selznick saying, "You see what a difference that makes?" And that same story 15 years later being told about Alfred Hitchcock and Grace Kelly in Rear Window. So what I tried to do was tell the reader, you know, if something might be apocryphal, I say this might be apocryphal. But, you know, hopefully not out to skewer anybody. It's really fun stories.
And it's entertaining. And, you know, people don't really ask questions when it comes to these things. You notice that. That's why there's still a very popular run of sales with, you know, Scandal magazines and things. I mean, people like to read this stuff. It's candy right for them. They enjoy it. And as you said, I think you're right. Having heard stories directly from people on the inside, in other words, from celebrities, I think those are a lot more to be trusted, I mean, than a lot. And, of course, like you said, there are still living witnesses to various things like...
I love that F. Murray Abraham in Amadeus. One night they were filming it in Prague because they figured that would capture the 18th century. The buildings were so old, they could turn the camera entirely around, and it seemed like, you know, they were back in Austria back when Mozart was alive. So one night he was one of the crew members in his apartment, and it was still communist Czechoslovakia. So the crew member thought for sure they were getting bugged by the secret police. And F. Murray Abraham said, "Who cares, man? Let's just go to dinner." And the crew member saw this decoration rug on the floor, and he lifted it up, and there was this mysterious metal plate underneath. And he said, "You see, I told you, man." And he gets a screwdriver and unscrews the plate, and they hear a loud crash as the chandelier in the room below goes crashing to the floor. And they got out of there and went to the nearest restaurant. So that was another thing. It didn't even matter to me if the story took place in L.A., you know, take place in Ireland and Austria and sure. You know, wherever. It's, you know, I was just looking for stuff that hopefully is entertaining. You know?
We're here at Cotolo Chronicles, and we're speaking with Stephen. What is that?
Showhead,
right, yeah. What is that? It's
a Jewish name.
Is it? What does it mean? Yeah. Is it got a meaning in Hebrew or some?
It's like a kosher butcher.
Wow. Those are the kind of things. I love those. I love origins and roots and things like that. Okay. You're at Cotolo Chronicles, and the book is Hollywood Anecdotes. And it's Hollywood Stories, for God's sake. Hollywood Tales. And you can get this you can get it at Amazon and all sorts of places. And you have a website, Hollywood?
Yes, sir. HollywoodStories.com.
Which you can get that. You can stay with us, right? Can't you, for a while?
Absolutely.
Yeah, great, because we have more stories and things that Jeremy wants us to... Jeremy wants to ask you something, right?
How you doing?
Is that Jeremy? Jeremy has a question. Now, there's a young guy who has been... He's met a lot of celebrities as they go pass through concerts and stuff. He always takes a great collection of pictures of him with celebrities. You do. You do it, and you show.
I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, he's proud. He's got lots of pictures. You can actually help him learn a little bit more. I try to teach him a little more of Hollywood history. Maybe you could also give him some.
You know what? It's endless. endless.
Yes, it is. You're right. It is. As we had a person, we had a, I forgot her name. Oh, this is horrible. She wrote a book called about Oscar, and it was just fascinating, the whole history of Hollywood itself and how Hollywood Boulevard became Hollywood Boulevard, what it was before, you know, when the film industry started, right. And that became actually a city, a town, a place. It was nothing. You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And how the name really means more than just the place.
It's yes.
The movie studios are like in a 50-mile radius. And I was watching an interview one time with Michael Douglas, and he was asked, what advice do you have for young actors coming out to Hollywood? And he said, my advice is don't go to L.A. Go to New York. And he said, New York is so much easier with public transportation. You can make it to the acting class. You can make it to the audition. Do good work in New York, and they'll see you in L.A. And you know, I'm not an actor at all, but I found that very interesting advice. And technology is helping that to alleviate that a little bit. Where you have Jennifer Lawrence auditioning on Skype for the Silver Linings Playbook, or Benedict Cumberbatch auditioning on the iPhone for Star Trek Into Darkness. So you know, that's overcoming the distance between things a little bit, but it is tough. You know, if people ever watched the show Entourage, they had a couple episodes where some of the characters on that show moved down to Malibu, and it was pointed out by one of the characters who was an actor, this is going to make it really hard for me to get to auditions, which is why a lot of people who live in Malibu, when they actually work, they'll stay in hotels that are nearer to the studio so they can make those 4 o'clock calls.
Steven, Jeremy here.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, how are you?
Fine.
Question, your book here, Hollywood Stories, sounds like you have a great assortment and array of stories in there from various sources. How many of them are experiences that you yourself experienced?
Oh, you know, I toss those in there, you know, here and there about seeing people like James Stewart and George Burns, and my meeting with Sammy Davis Jr. and the one time Steve Garvey, the ex-baseball star, came walking up to by the bus at Rodeo Drive, and I was excited, you know, being a Dodger fan. I said, Steve, how you doing? He comes over, he's great, he wants to meet everybody, and the entire bus was from England and Germany. Not a single person knew who he was, so it's kind of an awkward moment. So you know, little things are tossed in. I focus it's mostly historical.
Okay.
You know, but there's a certain hopefully an unpredictability that, you know, what the next subject is going to be. And I have gotten to meet a lot of stars, and some of them were just meeting them and saying hello. And other times it was, you know, it could lead into a good anecdote. So I don't know the number, but maybe like 20 or something like that out of the 1,000 or so stories.
Okay, sure. Okay.
I got tons of stories that like go nowhere. They're not stories, even though I was actually working in Hollywood and radio and TV. So, the funny thing was just seeing people. I mean, in L.A., because the people who work there, the celebrities, do normal things. I remember when in Brentwood, you know, there was a little shopping mall in Brentwood. I don't know if it's still there. It's a very nice little shopping. There was a pizza place there and a couple of other little stores. And I remember, like, going for pizza and looking next to me, and Henry Fonda was buying pizza, was buying a pie, was picking up a pie that he'd called ahead for to get. And this is, and nobody budged or walked, you know, nobody went nuts, because these people did normal things in this, in their community.
Yeah.
And only the people who are outside. I got tons of stories like that, just running into people, and they don't go anywhere, these stories, because it's like, hey, there's Henry Fonda. Or you go to the farmer's market, watching Danny Kaye choose which nuts he wanted at that great nut consortium they had there with all the nuts. And it's like, there's no story. You know, you stop, you go, hey, how you doing? You say hello to him. Nothing. And when you get into work situations with these people, then they just offer you stories. They offer you anecdotes. They tell you things. Those are the ones that are really good. So I understand what you're saying. So you hear the things you hear word of mouth or from other people, or stories. The stories you have yourself are either, I got some stories about, you know, being on when I was on the set or in movie studios. I mean, I do have some stories with celebrities, but the ones you just see them, see people on the street, you can. You can watch them. They drive. People don't. I guess people don't really get this, right?
Right. You know, I mean, you have to.
They're everywhere. They live here.
It's really fun stuff that you're not likely to see, like Roddy McDowell being in the movie The Planet of the Apes, resisting taking his ape makeup off at the end of the day and driving down the 405 in the full ape outfit and getting stuck in traffic or waving at everybody. Or you know, a bunch of gorillas in that movie commandeering, let's say, a station wagon, driving down Pacific Coast Highway, scaring everybody. Or John Barrymore, who you mentioned earlier, buying a house in Beverly Hills in the early days. Prices are going up because the stars are moving there. So he goes to the negotiation in his Mr. Hyde outfit and intimidates the real estate broker into lowering the price quite a bit. Or Gregory Peck going to see his house on Carrollwood Drive as General MacArthur, because he was playing MacArthur, and his wife called him out there to come see the house, and people are looking at this MacArthur lookalike with the pipe and being driven with his arms folded and everything, and he comes right up there and says, "Buy it," and gets back in the car and leaves. And later on says, "Thank goodness I was General MacArthur. If I had been Gregory Peck, I would have been dithering around all day." And you know, to be honest, I didn't see any of that in person. It just all sounded fun. And so, you know, I that's the type of thing I'm looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I was just thinking of something and it flew up because I was trying to imagine all those gorillas going down there. The people, though, I noticed the people, like I said, walking around, celebrities walking around. When you're on the tour, do you ever catch it? All of a sudden, do you look around and say, hey, look who was walking over there?
I've been very lucky. The one I still feel bad about was Jack Nicholson, who's a very colorful character, obviously. Just walking by the bus as people were getting back on Hollywood Boulevard, just walking by the bus, everybody gets their camera out. People are yelling, you know, like that. And I thought, you know, I'll just get his attention here if he can stop just for a second. So I beeped the horn and he looked up and he was startled and he ran away. And I feel so bad scaring Jack Nicholson and who I'm a big fan of. And the only thing I can say in my defense is that I did that with other people, the late Gregory Hines, Lou Diamond Phillips, Shelley Long, and a number of other people all stopped and waved. It was a nice moment. And so I'm sorry, Jack, if you're listening. I'll just say I didn't put it in this book, but I'm saving it for the second book. But there was this couple one time, and they were on Mulholland Drive, and it was very late at night, and it started raining, and they were from out of town, and the car broke down, and they didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, this man was pounding on the driver's side window, and he was in a bathrobe with this funny looking hair, and the wife was scared to death, and she said, "Don't open the window." And the husband said, "Oh, he's not going away." And so he rolled down the window, and the man said, "Thank you. I just want to see if you're okay." And it was Jack, and he invited him into the house and let them use the phone and made sure the tow truck came and, you know, was hospitable as can be.
I doubt very much if Jack is listening, but he does have this to say.
Wait till they get a load of me.
But other than that, what? You didn't get to hear that, did you? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. I did. I did try and cover a lot of origin stories and just a brief mention in the movie about Conrad Veidt, who was in the movie Casablanca, who Bogart shot down, Major Strasser, who left Germany because of threats from death squads when he spoke out against the Nazis, who always played Nazis, or at least tried to, and made them as decadent as possible, eating caviar. And in 1929, he had been in the Victor Hugo story, a silent film, The Man Who Laughed, about a nobleman whose face was disfigured by the king and always has this sort of hideous smile on his face. And he was one of the big inspirations for the creation of the character, the Joker.
Oh, that is that you mean Bob Kane?
Yeah.
Wow, that's him. Those are, I like those kind of things. The things that are.
Yeah. There's.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. All that stuff. I mean, most of these characters have multiple inspirations. So there's never one thing. But you know, the history of Superman, the history of Batman. It's just awesome.
Let's do something here. That'd be a lot of fun to do here because I have two. A relatively younger people here with me, Jeremy, and a friend of ours here. If each one of us says the name of a celebrity, let's see what you. I bet you can come up with something connected to
a pride.
Yeah, right. Okay, they're connected to. So go think of. Just say a name of an actor, actress. Just anything that comes to your mind. Go ahead.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor, what comes to mind is when Star Wars came out, you know, the initial Star Wars, George Lucas, he based that on George Lucas, you know, young, adventurous, likes racing cars that become space pods in the movie, has an argument with his uncle about being a Jedi Knight, which sort of mirrored the argument that he had with his father about being a director and don't get a real job. Han Solo was based on Francis Ford Coppola, who had an older brother, younger brother relationship with Lucas and sort of loud and cocky, where Lucas is quiet and introspective and always in debt, which, you know, Jabba the Hutt is coming after him. And the Empire was based on the movie studios. You know, it's like an allegory of young filmmakers trying to win their freedom from the movie studios. And after Star Wars was such a big hit, Coppola actually went to Lucas and said, I know we can make $1 billion if we turn the Force into a religion, you know, and we can sell it as a religion. And Lucas was too down to earth to do that idea. But I think Coppola might have had something because Ewan McGregor was approached by a fan after he played Obi-Wan Kenobi and said, Mr. McGregor, I'm a Jedi Knight in training. Can you advise me? So,
wow.
I don't know what Ewan McGregor's response was to that.
But. No, but you came up. You see, I was right. You came up with Ewan. What did you?
Do you remember what Mel Brooks' Spaceballs, what the Force was?
The Force? I can't remember offhand.
Wait, it was a Schwartz.
The Schwartz.
May the Schwartz be with you. How about Mel Brooks? I'll give you a Mel Brooks. Give me a Mel Brooks story.
Well, Mel Brooks, when he first came to Hollywood, he pulled pranks, just wild stuff. Like for example, he would take all the names off the doors at Columbia Pictures and exchange, you know, put different name tags and mess. I don't know why he did that exactly, but just for fun, messing up the executives' offices so that everybody would go to the wrong office, and they never, they never caught on, and he didn't get fired, and. One of the things I found really interesting about Mel Brooks, you know, when he made Blazing Saddles, he wanted to use Richard Pryor as in the Cleavon Little role. And the studio was afraid of Richard Pryor, you know, with his history of drugs and things like that.
He was a co-writer. He was a co-writer of that movie, too.
Co-writer, yeah. Right. Well, actually, what happened was that Mel Brooks was the one who ended up writing all the Cleavon Little parts. Richard Pryor helped a little, but he wasn't interested in that at all. Richard Pryor was totally into Mongo, and that's the guy that he ended up writing for.
Wow.
Mel Brooks also, of course, was the did you guys see the movie My Favorite Year?
Oh, certainly, sure.
You know, that was based on Mel Brooks having to take care of Errol Flynn when Errol Flynn was a guest star on the TV show The Show of Shows.
Right.
And he said in real life, it was much crazier than what they show in that movie with Peter O'Toole and Mark Lynn Baker. And you know, there are a number of stories about Mel Brooks, actually.
Well, I don't know who plays him in have you seen Neil Simon? Neil Simon wrote a play about that, The Laughter on the 23rd Floor.
Right,
and they made that movie about it. I don't know who plays I mean, I don't know who plays the Mel Brooks type character, but that was a lot more intense and realistic.
Can I also tell you when Mel Brooks and Buck Henry were making Get Smart, mm-hmm. They offered Don Adams a deal. They said you could have a big salary, or you could have 1/3 of the show, you know, 1/3 ownership of the show. But you only get the 1/3 ownership of the show if we're on for 5 years. So you got to gamble with us. And so Don Adams decided to gamble. He took the 1/3, and the show was canceled after the 4th season. And then it was picked up by another network for the 5th season. So Don Adams became super rich because the show went into syndication. And he still worked, but the last 20 years of his life, he was able to spend time at the Playboy Mansion with Hefner, and he traveled the world with his 7 children.
And he played a lot of poker, because I remember a couple of guys who played poker with him. One of them, who was Gabe Kaplan.
Yeah.
Who turned into a professional poker player.
Yeah. And Don Adams was asked one time, he was doing an interview, and he said, they asked him, how do you end up with so many children, 7 children? And he said, everybody asked me about that. I don't know what the big deal is. It only took 7 minutes.
Yeah. He was a funny guy. Don was a funny guy, and he did make a Get Smart movie.
Yeah,
that was not, I guess, just for fun or what have you. But and then you're right, he didn't do a lot of other things after that. Anyway,
Tuxedo and the Voice of Tennessee Tuxedo.
Do you have any Nathan Lane stories? Were you going to say Nathan Lane or who else? Who were you going to say?
Mine was Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi. There's a new... See, the kids come up with new names.
I really have a great story about Steve Buscemi. Go. Except the fact that Nicolas Cage was kind of embarrassed by Con Air, so he demanded that...
Nicolas Cage was kind of embarrassed by that movie?
Yeah, well, the script. So he felt better about it with... he demanded that he was the one who got Steve Buscemi and John Malkovich in it to give it a little more...
Oh, so legitimate. Yeah. So it didn't just look like a drive-in.
I'll have to get back with the Nathan Lane stories. I went and saw the producers with Jason Alexander, and he stopped the show for a second and made a reference to the fact that he wasn't Nathan Lane.
I would never confuse those two.
This is totally away from it, but with Jason Alexander, Larry David, he had the one time he was working on Saturday Night Live, and it was so frustrating for him. Nobody would get a coffee with him. His sketches were never used. And so he ended up telling Richard Ebersol that SNL stinks and I quit. And then he started worrying about his $50,000 a year salary. So Monday morning he showed up like nothing happened. And like he didn't quit. And that was later passed on to George on Seinfeld, where they had a similar event with George, where he showed up. And Jason Alexander used to come to Larry David from the beginning of the show. And he said, what are you talking about? This is so crazy. Nobody gives a girlfriend a hand-me-down cashmere sweater. You know, nobody quits a job because they're not allowed to use the boss's private bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Larry David said, what do you mean? That's exactly what happened to me. And the way I'm writing George is exactly how I reacted to it.
I stopped there for a second because I never heard anybody say Richard Ebersol.
Want to say the other word on the radio.
Oh, that's okay. That's his name. I mean, but
yeah, right. You're right.
When I was working over at the Midnight Special, he was the producer for a while over there at Dick Ebersol, and before he went on to do other stuff there. But that was just strange to me to hear it. I'm going, you're talking about the same person, right? Talking about Dick Ebersol, right? Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. You say anything you want here. We don't encourage it, but you can. There's no problem. You got Jeremy. You got who else? Would you like to know? Do we have any other names?
Another name. How about Mike Myers?
Mike Myers. with it's just a coincidence that Lorne Michaels used to live at the Chateau Marmont Hotel when he came up with the idea of Saturday Night Live. And 5 years later, John Belushi died at the same hotel, the yes. Chateau Marmont Hotel. And there was one episode where Belushi was on where he was all drugged out and everything like that. And he said, I can't work tonight. And Lorne Michaels said, well, I'll let a doctor examine you. And the doctor said, well, you know, Mr. Michaels, if he goes on tonight, this Belushi, I'd say there's a 50-50 chance he won't make it through the show. Mm. And Lorne Michaels said, okay, I'm willing to take the chance.
Yeah.
And it was about 10 years later that Mike Myers said that he based the character of Dr. Evil in the Austin Powers movies on Lorne Michaels.
Oh.
And, whether that had anything to do with Belushi is probably not the case.
I love this kind of stuff because so many characters. I mean, I'm being a writer. So many people are based on other people. I just got an email from somebody listening. Said wants to know if you have any stories about Lee Van Cleef.
I got stories about the good, the bad, and the ugly. But you know what? They're more about Eli Wallach than Lee Van Cleef. I don't
really
have anything good on Levi.
What about
Eli Wallach was. You know, another one of the Chateau Marmont guests who got a call from Sergio Leone wanted him in the movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and it was quite an experience. I mean, one time he picked up some acid and he thought it was lemon soda. He nearly got decapitated by a train. He nearly got crushed by an exploding bridge. He had the one scene where Tuco was being hung and then Clint Eastwood shoots the rope and the horse got scared to death and started running and Eli Wallach saying, whoa, whoa, and he can't stop it because his hands were tied and it was just one scary event after the other. And then he finished the movie and he got a call from Henry Fonda and said, Sergio Leone wants me for Once Upon a Time in the West, should I do it? And without hesitation, Eli Wallach said, yes, you'll have a wonderful experience. And Henry Fonda later called up Eli Wallach to thank him. It turned out to be absolutely true.
Wow.
And, I will try, I'm going to, after the show, I'll be researching Nathan Lane and Lee Van Cleef and try and get some more because, like I said, it never stops.
We'll have you on again because it never stops. And, you know, and I like bouncing some stories off of you because you do it and I know some things and have been around. Hey, here's another request from someone, and these are kind of esoteric. How about Jack Elam?
I don't have any good stories.
Okay.
Jack Elam, I know oh yeah, you know there was a movie he was in with Ernest Borgnine, one of my favorites, and they were playing Mexican soldiers, and I know or Mexican bandits, and I know they were walking through this small town in Mexico, and they were actually stopped and threatened by the Mexican army, and had a, you know, I don't know if they were nearly shot, but they were certainly afraid. And had to explain themselves. And, Ernest Borgnine, if people want to read a great book, his book, Ernie, was a great source of anecdotes. And he has to be one of the, it comes off as one of the nicest people in the history of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately didn't get any of the Ernest Borgnine stories in my first book, but one of the stories was, that when he made the movie Marty, which he won the Oscar for, he was coming back to his trailer one day, and these four tough guys stopped him and said, hey, aren't you the guy who beat up Sinatra and From Here to Eternity? And he goes, yes. And they said, well, you know, we love Sinatra, and we're going to beat you up. And he said, well, look, I'll fight you one at a time. I'm not going to fight all four of you. But before we do, I'm telling you, you're making a mistake. It was only a movie. Sinatra and I are paisan. We love each other. And they said, Paisan, you're Italian? And he goes, yeah. My family's name was Borgianino and my mother changed it when we came to America. And he said, well, why didn't you say so? And they took him out for pizza instead and treated him to lunch for the rest of the movie shoot. Wow.
And we all know what famous cartoon character Ernest Borgnine voices.
Yeah, the SpongeBob, oh, the one from SpongeBob.
Man from SpongeBob.
I did not know that.
Tim Conway is Barnacle Boy. Two great actors.
I didn't know that SpongeBob went back that far. Well, Tim's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah, Tim's alive.
Tim's alive, isn't he?
It was wonderful for him to find a new generation of fans.
Yeah. And,
go ahead.
Well, Borgnine was pushing that book before, right before he died. I saw him in a lot of shows telling stories and stuff, and that's really great when you get those are really great the biographies that have those stories. I remember reading a bunch of them. In other words, when you can read from that's a good source, and the guy's telling a story. I have a question about. Did you know the Jerry Lewis book that he wrote? I loved that book. The one I loved. I don't know, it was I Love You, Dean, or whatever it was. It was Dean and Me. I think it was Dean and Me.
Right.
Recently, it's a great book. I wonder, because you can be getting it right from the source exactly what happened, and you read things in there that you just have to. I mean, you have to trust, even though memory for some of these older folks can be a problem too.
And also, you get
that was a horrible paragraph, wasn't it? I'm sorry, that was a terrible paragraph. Go ahead,
I mean, the more you read, the more contradictions you get. Pretty negative book, The Dark Side of Genius about Alfred Hitchcock. Great book by Donald Spoto. Pretty negative though, and it presented Hitchcock as sort of a sick character, which you get in these movies like Hitchcock and The Girl. And they had this story in the book about how Hitchcock abused a kid in the Catholic school that he had gone to, that he handcuffed him in the boiler room and left him there. Well, 10 years later, there was another Hitchcock biography by Patrick McGilligan. And he went and interviewed the kid who was still alive, who supposedly Hitchcock, it's called Hitchcock, A Life in Darkness and Light, I think is the title. He interviewed the same kid that Donald Spoto mentioned. And he said, it turns out that you went to school, according to my records, after Alfred Hitchcock. So Alfred Hitchcock couldn't have done that to you. And the kid said, oh, it must have been somebody else then.
Absolutely. But here's the thing though, and read because the publishers want these kiss and tell books, and they really want juicy stuff.
Right.
They tend to lean that way, or all the good stuff is kind of, all the normal stuff is kind of overlooked because of the shocking expose stuff. But ultimately, I know this because celebrities, if you're in a certain group of celebrities and stuff, they'll say things and you'll learn things about them that you'd never learn any other way. These are just people, and they do have, we all have dark sides and light sides, or what anyone else would judge to be that. So a lot of this stuff has got to be based on some truth, because, we're all people with many different threads of personality.
Right, right.
So...
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you have any stories that are like downright bad? I mean, that are like that show. Or do you only tell stories of, here's a funny anecdote, and this guy was that and that guy? Do you have any like really bad, really?
Pretty much I try to stick to funny anecdotes or interesting, hopefully interesting anecdotes or origin stories. I might mention something in passing, some scandal in passing or something like that. But I figured, Hollywood Babylon is already out there. There's a lot of scandals already out. Like for example, Natalie Wood. There's so much stuff out there about that. But one of the things I found really interesting about the time of her death was she was supposed to be in the movie Thelma and Louise with Tuesday Weld. And after she died, Tuesday Weld dropped out of the project, and that movie was delayed for 10 years. And of course, that movie was great for Susan Sarandon. It was great for Gina Davis. But the real breakout star of that movie was Brad Pitt. And in 1981, Brad Pitt was enrolling in the University of Missouri as a journalism major. But in 1991, when he got the opportunity for Thelma and Louise, his job previously was working at near your place in Franklin and La Brea, mm-hmm. Sunset and La Brea, mm-hmm. at El Pollo Loco, standing in a chicken suit trying to lure people in.
God, I miss El Pollo Loco so much. That is the greatest app. Is it still out? They still have it out there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, the greatest chicken in the world. Oh.
Suits that I've seen. I guess Brad Pitt took a lot of abuse.
For what?
I'm just standing there in chicken suit. Oh. People roll down the window and yell stuff. So
yeah, you know, I've been wondering. Jane Mansfield really? Was she really decapitated in that car accident, or is that just something they added because she was died in that car accident? Right.
As far as I know, she was decapitated, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't, you know.
Those are the things.
Hollywood Babylon is a book that is definitely questioned by a lot of people. Kenneth Anger's book. So a lot of the stories in that, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, the Bugsy Siegel murder case is still, as far as I know, last I heard like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about if you had any Bugsy Siegel stuff. Go. Yeah.
It's still an open case in Beverly Hills. They never, I mean, everybody assumes it was a gangland hit, but they never proved it. And there were a lot of jilted lovers and jealous husbands as far as Bugsy Siegel goes. So, you know, other results are possible.
But, you know, when something like that happens and it's still up in the air, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's even more evidence that it was a hit. Because they never, I mean, think about all the hits that nobody ever, you know? That,
right.
And you saw the movie. I mean, that really made a lot of sense in terms of how that particular culture works. But
I love the story where Bugsy Siegel showed up to a George Raft movie and George Raft was kind of nervous about Bugsy Siegel's associates because they look like these really tough characters. And Bugsy was trying to make him feel better, and he said, "George, don't worry, we only kill each other."
It's good. I love those. I love those kind of.
Steven, do you have any good Chris Walken stories?
Well, you know, the first thing that came to mind was Natalie Wood. You know, automatically, right. and you know, obviously, that's a mysterious situation, what happened there, but I'll tell you Robert Wagner's book, I think it's called Pieces of My Heart, which came out about 2 years ago, which I think spurred on Lana Wood and Dennis, I forget his name, Devane, the boat captain, to try and reopen the case, the Natalie Wood case. You know, he had a story, Robert Wagner, about how he, when he found out that Natalie Wood was dating Warren Beatty back in 1961, which happened after he and Natalie Wood were no longer together, he was enraged and he got a gun and he went looking for Warren Beatty to shoot him and kill him.
Really?
And he said, luckily I never found him. And then, of course, they both married other people, and then they got back together. And then when Natalie Wood was in her final movie, Brainstorm, Robert Wagner admitted that Chris Walken was giving him that same old Warren Beatty feeling because he had such good chemistry with Natalie Wood. And then, of course, they had the interesting thing, well, you know, if you're jealous of this guy, why would you invite him on the boat ride? You know,
well, I always thought they were a very strange pair to be friends. Not that I know either of them, but isn't that a weird combination?
Well, Wagner, two other couples did cancel. It was supposed to be 8 people. But the thing was that Robert Wagner admitted in the book that he, you know, got into a huge argument with Christopher Walken right before the drowning, because Christopher Walken felt that Natalie Wood should further her career because she was just coming back with Brainstorm and From Here to Eternity, and she was such a great actress.
She was in that movie I was in, Meteor.
Oh, Meteor,
Meteor, one of the worst movies of all time, which is one of the Frank Cotullo Film Festival, if you want to. It's one of the, I'm actually in that movie, but.
You know, she was the first one to be considered for Lois Lane in the Christopher Reeve Superman movie. And nothing against Margot Kidder, but I would have preferred Natalie Wood.
But wasn't Natalie, well, how old was Natalie at that point, though?
Like 36, 37.
Yeah, okay, I would have been okay, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, as young as Amy Adams is now. Mm-hmm. But the thing, just to finish up with that thing, Robert Wagner said that he got so mad at Christopher Walken for suggesting that Natalie Wood should put career above family that he actually smashed a wine bottle and was going to go after Christopher Walken with it.
Robert Wagner's like, I had no idea he was so,
Yeah, it was pretty interesting reading the book, but, you know, with all that said, I still don't think he caused her to drown. And it's, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, I wasn't there. And it's very tough on the daughters, every time the press brings it up and then people say, oh, he's a murderer, you know, whatever. I mean, there's no evidence of that. So, but he did admit it in the book that he sometimes had some violent tendencies, and it was kind of interesting to read about.
Well, here's a Christopher Walken. Jeremy says he has a Christopher Walken story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
maybe you can use this.
What? It's just an amusing anecdote.
That's what we're dealing with here.
Yes. Anecdote. I was at a Hollywood party it was getting pretty late, and the party was coming to a close, and I was heading out, and there standing out in the driveway is Christopher Walken. And I said, Chris, what are you doing here? And he says, stranded. And I,
wow.
Yeah, he said, I'm looking for the friend. He's not here. And someone dropped me off and then just drove away. And I said, so I told him, I was like, oh, well, so you don't have a ride? He's like, no. I said, okay, well, I'd be happy to give you a lift if you need to. He said, that'd be great. So we're walking to my car, and obviously I don't live in California, so I had a rental car, and it was one of those ones where you press the button and you can start the car up before you're even inside. So I pressed this button because I think, oh, this will be fun. So I pressed the button, and he jumps back like maybe 3 feet. He goes, whoa! He says, your car is alive. And then we get in the car. Well, I get in the car. He's still standing outside the car, just staring into the headlights for about 3 minutes straight. And finally, I rolled down the window. I said, Chris, you coming? And he said, chase me.
He said what?
Chase me? He said, chase me.
Chase me?
Yeah.
You think he was inebriated or what?
Oh, I'm sure of it, yeah.
Chase me.
Chase
wow.
me. Wow. Now, you can use that if you want. You could,
what happened then?
Then what? Did you chase? What happened?
No, I said, I don't think that's quite a good idea, Chris. How about you get in the car? And eventually, you know, he was definitely intoxicated. He was stumbling around. But
maybe what happened after that is they found Christopher Walken. Because he couldn't get a ride.
I mean, that's the thing about the Natalie Wood case opening up 31 years later, because everybody was drunk out of their mind.
Right.
After that, Natalie Wood, Christopher Walken, Robert Wagner, they were at Doug's in Catalina, Doug's restaurant, and they were drinking like crazy. So, I mean, it's a great story. I don't know how they can expect them to remember anything 31 years later. But
I used to eat all the time at Vitello's, and of course Vitello's became famous. Remind everyone why Vitello. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Robert Blake.
Yeah, I used to eat at Vitello's all the time because they made a couple of great things I liked there. And I never, ever saw one personality in there. And then when I heard that was a place that Robert Blake and his wife vacated, I was amazed. I never saw him there.
Right. And you know.
Or anyone. So I never saw
him. What? So ironic. The first episode of Beretta was he left his fiancée in the car, went into, I think it was a restaurant, came out, and she was shot.
Really? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
like Stephen J. Cannell playing the, you know, planned the whole thing. I personally thought again that there was a case where there wasn't much evidence against him. In fact, he tried to save her that night and was going door to door and trying to get help. I don't think it was the same incriminating stuff as the OJ case, but anyway, I'm no police forensics expert, but an interesting thing that I've read is that if they don't solve a case within 72 hours, they usually don't solve it. And it's interesting to compare like Robert Blake to OJ, where Robert Blake was arrested 6 months later after that case went down, or after the killing went down. Whereas OJ, they had handcuffs on him and then they let him go. And then, the chase happened after that. Yeah. Very, very quickly after the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson.
Scandal-wise, do people ask you questions like we're asking you? Do people say,
yeah,
hey, tell one about this?
People ask all sorts of stuff, and I try and keep up on it. I don't really write about it. I try and look, you know, again, obviously for the lighthearted stuff. But I constantly read, and obviously there's been so many with Lana Turner and Johnny Stompanano and going back to Fatty Arbuckle and Natalie Wood and the Black Dahlia and all the different things that have gone on through the years.
What did you have like one story that you just have to tell over and over again because people really love it? Like one gigantic one that just everybody, you capture everybody's attention, or they ask you about us because it's so popular? Or is it one personality?
Really,
do more people ask about Marilyn Monroe than...
Not really, because when you're doing a tour, it's sort of a continuous thing, you know? So there's not really one... It's more like places that people want to see rather than hopefully like to hear a fun narration. But there's not really one story or one thing that really sticks out.
People ask you about places, like they say, do people say, hey, can we go to the building where Laurel and Hardy brought the piano up the stairs? Is that still around? That used to be a big place.
That's in Silver Lake, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a story. I don't get many Laurel and Hardy questions, but I love them as a subject. And there was one time they were making a movie in Venice called We All Fall Down.
And that's Venice. We're talking about Venice, California, friends.
Venice, California, yeah. And they had a scene where they were running down an alleyway and their wives were chasing them and the wives started shooting. And it was kind of a strange scene. All these men came out of the apartments and they were in their underwear and they ran away. It's kind of loose, but I guess they're saying that these men are having affairs or something like that. So Laurel gathered the men around and he said, now listen, you men, we rented these apartments. It's costing us a bloody fortune. So we want to get it right on the first take. So you come out of the apartments in your underwear. Some of you can be trying to put your trousers on, but we only want you in the frame for 10 seconds, disappear down the alley, run away. So let's get it right the first time. So they do the scene. Laurel calls action. They run down the alley. The wives shoot. The men follow the instructions. They come out of the alleyway in their underwear and they run away as instructed. All except for one guy who's like 15 seconds late, runs the wrong way, runs smack dab into Laurel, ruins his close up. And Laurel says, you bloody fool, you ruined the whole shot. And the guy yelled, I'm not in the movie.
Do you think there's more stories?
Do you think second book? Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask this question. Do you think there are more stories in the days like before in the early years of Hollywood than in the later years of Hollywood? I know volume doesn't matter, but do you think that there's why? Because you saw Chaplin and the birth of movies and stars and everything like that.
Yeah, there's definitely more history, but that doesn't mean that today's stars can't have funny and witty things to say. In fact, John McTiernan, the director of Die Hard, who's now got some legal problems, was once complaining that a lot of the stars, young actors, work harder on the anecdotes that they tell on Leno and Letterman than they do on learning their lines and being pros. So I'm, you know, certainly there's always new stuff coming along. But obviously, you know, there's more history when you go back a little bit further, but it, you know, it's always interesting how the business is changing all the time and how things like 3D have come in and how things like Netflix are affecting, it's fantastic for us. We got, you know, so many entertainment choices right now.
You know,
to me, what's really interesting is it seems like until this summer that there's been a trend moving away from the stars and moving more towards concept. And, I mentioned Entourage earlier, which is based on the character of Ari, is based on Ari Emanuel, the head of the William Morris Endeavor agency, Rahm Emanuel's brother. Mm-hmm. Ari Emanuel did an interview I was watching, and it was really interesting because he didn't mention stars at all. He mentioned people like Susan Collins, the creator of The Hunger Games. Mm. He mentioned Christopher Nolan. He mentioned Larry David. You mentioned Seth MacFarlane. And I think, you know, with the internet and everything, more and more people are interested in the creative forces behind the shoots than they've ever been before. People are interested in that Vince Gilligan created Breaking Bad, or that Joss Whedon created all these TV shows like Buffy and is doing The Avengers, and people want to meet them. And they're getting the big interest. Now, this summer so far, though, happens to be a pretty star-laden summer with Tom Cruise and Oblivion and Brad Pitt and World War Z and Johnny Depp and The Lone Ranger. But I think the studios generally, there's a trend getting away from the stars a little bit.
Yeah, the thing that the stars have, I read an entirely wonderful article in Vanity Fair about the World War Z.
I read that article. That was very interesting.
It was fascinating. No one would ever think that this that it would take so much, because people don't know a lot about how movies are made anyway. But the thing that is different now than was when there was a lot of star power is how important the measure of importance they're putting on his career based on this one movie.
Well, you know, he's never really had a blockbuster movie like Robert Downey Jr. or Tom Cruise, right, or Will Smith or Johnny Depp.
He's looking for a franchise, huh?
Yeah, his biggest movie was Ocean's 11, and that's really probably not him. You know, that's an ensemble piece. So you could just notice now that years ago he wouldn't talk about his personal life at all, and now he's kind of dragging Angelina Jolie on the red carpet with him because he's got so much on the line with this movie.
But he was always a star, and everyone knew him, and he got a lot of press and everything. But it's amazing now, because that was never the case. I mean, when they were John Wayans and Clark Gables, they didn't go, you know, Gable, you don't really send this one off into the sky with big dollars. You're done. That didn't happen, yeah?
Well, you know, gossip is something that's really changed because in the old days, the gossip columnists would protect the stars.
Mm-hmm.
So when John Wayne would show up with Marlena Dietrich at a baseball game and they were both married, the papers would say, oh, they're promoting the movie. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you didn't find out about Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, unless you knew them. I mean, that's the way it was.
Yeah, they worked together with the studios in terms. They would give them material, and they would protect them and help them back in the image.
Right, absolutely. And now it's a totally different situation where the gossip and the promotion of the movie are much more intertwined than they were before. So gossip columnists, that started Confidential magazine, which was a precursor to the National Enquirer, and the state of California was able to sue Confidential magazine out of business, and the Confidential tried to subpoena a bunch of the stars they were writing about, and everybody was hiding out in Las Vegas, and people mysteriously died before they testified in that trial. But now it, you know, it's a different situation. I mean, now if you have something like the Winona Ryder shoplifting, it's on the wire services immediately. Whereas in the old days, they'd send Howard Strickland from MGM to the house. I mean, like when Paul Byrne died, Gene Harlow's husband, the MGM people got there before the police did.
Yeah.
So I mean, things are just a different, you know, a different ball game. Certainly we don't find out everything, but we definitely find out more than people used to find out about the stars in the past as far as.
Well, there's also no studio machine that right. works with those. Every stars are all separately. They're working for their own production companies or somebody else. And the big studios have become mostly distribution centers. So they don't have that army of publicity people and stuff anymore. Right. Everybody has their own anyway. What is it, Jeremy?
If I was going to argue anything, I would say that Brad Pitt has done a couple big roles, including Fight Club, which was enormous. Had a big cult following.
Oh, I'm just talking about the billion-dollar blockbuster. That's all. I'm not trying to put down Brad Pitt's. You know, I love the movie Babel myself, and I really enjoyed Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I'm just saying he's never had that billion-dollar. Or even close to it, actually, that blockbuster. I'm going by the money,
and that's exactly what it goes by more than ever now. Right. Now, and that's why we're in this particular situation.
And the problem is, a movie like World War Z or a movie like The Man of Steel, they have to make at least $500 million probably to break even because of the prints and advertising. Whereas a movie like The Fight Club, it is probably really profitable with like $200 million, or I don't have it right in front of me. It's a different situation. This is a $200 million movie, World War II.
Yeah, and you can't go.
That's what I'm saying. Not a put down on Brad Pitt whatsoever, or The Fight Club.
And you can't go to a major studio and ask them to put up money and say, "Hey, look, what I got here is a real cult classic." Because they'll show you the door right away. They don't want to make the money in 20 years or 10 years, you know?
I liked Brad Pitt in California with Juliette Lewis.
Yeah.
Do you have any Juliette Lewis anecdotes?
Gosh. Not off the top of my head. I was reading something about her recently, but I can't remember. But I was going to say that Brad Pitt did have a problem after the Fight Club. He was challenged in a liquor store to a fight, had to talk his way out of it. And that's a common thing that happens to actors who play a lot of tough guys is they if they go into bars and things like that, they get challenged.
Yeah, and there he is. And there he's going into a store, doing what normal people do. Yeah, I mean, does he really need to? I mean, a lot of people get this impression in Hollywood that stars don't do anything for themselves, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, very few. I mean, one of the reasons why Ed McMahon ended up broke is because he had a driver all the time and was giving away money all the time and lived a lifestyle where people were doing things for him versus Johnny Carson, who, you know, drove himself everywhere. And he was divorced 3 times. So that helped hurt his finances a little bit, but I don't think he ended up broke like Ed McMahon did.
No, not at all. You're right. There are probably very few people who run that royalty type, existence.
Right. I mean, there are some people like Hitchcock or Audrey Hepburn. I mean, they hated driving, or like Michael Caine. Has all these Rolls Royces, but never learned to drive. And I think he's very well to do. But there are some people who live that extravagant lifestyle. And, I was going to just say a quick story that Humphrey Bogart, he was a real little guy, always played tough guys. So that got him into a bit of trouble. And he was a big drinker. And he was in a bar one night with his third wife, Mayo Metho. And this idiot walked up and said, "Oh, Humphrey Bogart, Mr. Tough Guy, you don't look so tough to me." And the guy was like, "Why don't we step outside?" And Bogart's trying to defuse it. "Have a drink, pal. I don't want to fight you." And the guy's like, "Well, I told my friends at the bar I could beat you." So finally, wearily, Bogart said, "Mayo, take care of him." and Mayo took off her shoe and beat the hell out of her.
That's a lot like the attempted murder of George Harrison, and the guy who broke into George Harrison's house, and it turned out to be his wife who got a lamp, knocked him out with a lamp and everything. And yet she was the one who turned out being the hero there.
I have a friend who drove George Harrison in a limo, and he said I never met him, but he said he was the nicest guy, and that was so horrible. Obviously, a story about the Beatles. Ringo was sick, so he couldn't go with them. But after Help came out in 1965, they were on a tour in Australia, and they were in an open convertible. And there were like 300,000 people behind barricades. And John said with maybe looking in the future a little bit, that we could get assassinated. I could get shot right now. And George said, this is like Kennedy. We're going to get killed. And McCartney loved every minute of it. You know, he just waved at the crowd and gave everybody the thumbs up, and it was really positive. Mm-hmm. And then after the parade, he found out that the thumbs up is an obscene gesture in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. See that? See? Yeah. Okay. 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 What were you, Jerry, this guy?
I had one last request for an anecdote. You mentioned Joss Whedon earlier. I'm a big fan of his. I don't know if you had any.
Me too. And I met him, and he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in a shop in Santa Monica. He happened to come in, and I just said, "Oh, Mr. Whedon, I just want to tell you, I really enjoyed Buffy and Angel." This is about 12 years ago. He said, "Thank you very much," and we shook hands. So, not much of a story, but he was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
I was always fascinated with meeting people who, everybody has a preconceived feeling or, like or dislike, and they can't even explain it half the time, right, about celebrities, because people say, "I like him," and I don't like him, and they don't even know why, right? I mean, you always have these preconceived assessments, and feelings. And I was always shocked, I learned later, as I met people who I thought, I had these preconceived thoughts about them, and I was shocked at so many of them that I thought were, "Wow, this guy's going to be exactly the way I think," totally the opposite. And I really took on a whole different attitude once I started meeting people and going, I can't think about them as I read about them or as I thought about them, because they're perfectly fine people. Right? I mean, because the images, the whole thing about images, what you put onto a celebrity with your own, inefficient, feelings, because, you have no reason to feel these ways, or you don't like them in a movie and then you blame them for it or whatever. But when you meet people, it's entirely different. You have probably met, it's probably happened to you. Can you think of someone you absolutely really didn't like, and then suddenly you met one, whoa.
Well, the two cases that come to mind immediately. The one that was so nice was Alexander Goodenough, who played the bad guy in Die Hard. It was a ballet dancer.
Oh.
And for some reason, I had this arrogant idea of him. I mean, I didn't give him much thought. I didn't go around thinking,
right,
"Boy, that Alexander Goodenough is arrogant." It was just a fleeting thought,
right.
And I was at the bathroom at the farmer's market washing my face. I looked up. He was standing right next to me. We caught eyes. I said, "Hey, how you doing, man?" He goes, "Hey, great, man. How are you?" And we just stepped outside and we started talking. And he was there with his son. It was the harvest day at the farmer's market. And it was, just, again, as nice as could be. I mean, I didn't want to take up too much of his time, but it was a totally different impression I had of him. And maybe that's because of the movie roles. And then the other one was Kirk Douglas was one of the stars I researched, and supposedly he had a really nasty reputation, like the movie The Arrangement. There was a story about him berating another actor, and it got so bad that the director said, "Hey, Kirk, when you were a young kid, you were a nice guy, but now you're a big star and you're a big jerk." And Kirk Douglas said, "No, you got it all wrong, pal. I've always been a big jerk. I finally had the power to show it." And
good.
The thing that happened on the tour was we were at Rodeo Drive. There he is. I rolled down the window. I researched him, so I said, oh, maybe he won't be nice. But I rolled down the window. Mr. Douglas, could you stop for a minute so everybody can have your picture? He's like, yeah, sure. Hey, everybody, how are you? And he was nice as could be. So he didn't live up to that reputation at all.
Yeah, I am the I must admit, though, there were times when there – and there's an old saying about, you know, if you really admire someone and you've never met them – for any what reason, they wrote a book, they're in a movie, or they're gray, whatever. Probably the worst thing you could do is to meet them in any kind of personal situation, because we build up, we build people into icons. I mean, we're way, way bigger than they can ever live up to our imagination. So what we do is set ourselves up for disappointment. So they say, like, well, if you really, really, really like someone, don't meet them, but give those people a chance who you don't like, because chances are they're a lot nicer, and you'll have a different opinion about them. They won't let you down. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at the reputation Joan Crawford has now.
Yeah.
I mean, Bobby Dearest probably overshadows anything that you know, she ever did. But actually, in real life, she answered every bit of fan mail. At the end of her life, one of her roommates was one of her fans, who came over there to take care of her. And she actually, the day she died, I think it was pancreatic cancer, she actually made a meal for both her housekeeper and the fan and cleaned up after them and then, you know, quietly died. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously there are things. Zsa Zsa Gabor is another one. Mm-hmm. Zsa Zsa Gabor. Mm-hmm. That's a star who was nice as could be, took pictures with all my people, but, you know, slapping the policeman's the number one thing. And you know, but all the times when she went with Bob Hope and entertained the troops, Bob Hope used to have problems getting stars to go with him, mm-hmm. because they, you know, the time off, going to combat zones, not having dressing
sure.
rooms, those are the types of things Bob Hope would hear.
Yeah.
Never from Zsa Zsa Gabor. And they had that running gag where they'd come out on stage and he would say, hey, Zsa Zsa, is it true you don't have any domestic skills at all? And she would say, oh, Robert, darling, I'm a great housekeeper. Every time I get the divorce, I keep the house.
Yeah, and you're right about that. It's amazing, the whole image factory and everything like that. Stephen, it has been absolutely wonderful. And you know, I know you do have a lot of stories. So let's try and sell some books again maybe next month or something. Come back and we'll exchange some more stories.
Sure, and if people are interested, the book Hollywood Stories is available three ways, ebook, hardcover, and audiobook. The audiobook's over 11 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm not the narrator on the audiobook, but all the links are at hollywoodstories.com.
Now, please do me a personal favor, Stephen, and that is approve me as a contact on Skype so I can get you again. Because
you got it, buddy.
You didn't do it.
Well, take care of that right now.
All right, and we will, and we'll have Stephen on again because we have a lot to talk to each other about too. Because we have a lot of stories, and it's fun, and people do love these kind of things. Thanks a lot. We'll be hawking the book even when you're not on, and make sure everybody gets over there and get some stuff. And we will see you. We'll talk to you again shortly. I'll email you, and we'll set up a time. Okay.
Anytime, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. But,
oh, and thank you, Jeremy, and the young lady, too. Thank you.
Okay, you got it.
It's my pleasure, Stephen.
Stephen right. is gone. See you later, Stephen.
You got it, buddy.
There he goes. Go get that darn book, will you, for heaven's sake, because those things are good to know about.
That's Mr. Cotolo over there. You know what I mean?
That's him. See, that there was a sighting. There was a Cotolo sighting. Did you hear that one? It's your favorite guy. Let's see if he actually okays me. Did he okay me yet? Huh? What? Skype, it's great, man. What a world we live in. My name is Frank. It's all the men. His name adorns the title of the show. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Frank.
And thank you, dear unidentified female... audience, I think an audience. Thank you, dear.
You're quite welcome.
We will be back, and don't forget to go over to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Go to all the other places, and to Jeremy.
Remember, Hubbub Festival, Saturday, June 29th in Harrisburg.
So if you're in town here in PA, go see Jeremy. I hear he's going to say some funny stuff. happening. I know for a fact. Oh, I hope so. In any event, in all events, in any, what is it? In this event, in that event, in this event, in any other one, events, we'll be with you again as soon as time goes by. Go to the website, go to all the different stations. We'll be updating that. There's a lot of new stations. Hello, everyone. We'll be with you again next time. I don't know what's going to happen because we don't know who's going to be on, but we'll get around to it. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you are. We're all leaving here now. I know I'm leaving because I got nothing more to say.